Blame for high costs in the U.S. healthcare system is often directed at health insurance companies. Although the tasks performed by insurers remain necessary, the insurance industry is falling short on delivering value. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Limor Daphne, a professor of business administration at Harvard Business School and a professor of public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School. Professor Daphne has written a perspective article about corporatization of the health insurance industry as part of the journal's series on the corporatization of U.S. healthcare. Professor Daphne, how do you define corporatization in the health insurance industry in particular?
I define corporatization as having a for-profit ownership status and being a consolidated corporate entity spread across multiple markets and units.
You say in your perspective article that the U.S. health insurance sector corporatized well before hospitals and physician practices. So what's that history?
I think the history is important because the question that I'm asking is corporatization a driver of dissatisfaction with the U.S. health insurance industry, and maybe not so much dissatisfaction, but also poor performance as measured by the quality of health we get for what we spend that goes through commercial insurers? And to understand how the industry got corporatized, if you kind of look back, you realize that this happened long before it happened in other healthcare sectors. So this concern about recent corporatization in particular, say with private equity and physician group roll-ups, or with the dramatic surge in the size of hospital systems. So this concern is something that was presaged, if you will, by the health insurance industry, where really in the 80s and 90s, smaller for-profit insurers were kind of increasing their geographic footprints and going from local entities to regional and then national.
And then what factors have driven consolidation in the health insurance industry?
So, you know, a couple of factors. One component is just that there's economies of scale in many businesses and insurance as well. If you have substantial fixed costs, say of developing interfaces for individuals to access their claims or developing protocols for a range of possible services that your patients may need, all kinds of overhead like that, these fixed costs can be spread across a greater number of lives if you have a bigger entity. So one is the technology of insurance is a big driver. Another important driver, though, because that gets you only so far in terms of achieving economies of scale and the actual administration of insurance. And I should throw in there the important fact that risk is less variable in larger population as an aggregate. So if you have more lives to cover, you can more accurately estimate your spending, and therefore you're not going to need to have quite as much in reserve in the event of like outlier cases. So that's relevant too. But beyond the economies of scale, which include the benefits of minimizing aggregate risk, there's also the fact that for-profit entities have this, you could call it an obsession, but really it's a market imperative to grow and to expand. And as a result, a for-profit insurer looking to grow wants to merge with another for-profit insurer and so forth. And so we saw the big mergers go through. And then there was also conversions of Blue Cross affiliates, which I could talk about, but from nonprofit to for-profit status, and then mergers among those.
How has insurer consolidation affected consolidation in other areas of the healthcare system?
I would say that the consolidation in terms of, you know, the actual insurance product has mainly been a motivator for hospitals and increasingly physicians as well to try to aggregate themselves and create a countervailing bargaining leverage so that the insurers are less able to kind of name a price and the providers have to take it. If the providers have bargaining leverage themselves, then it becomes more of an actual negotiation. And many insurers would say that it's the other way around now in many locations where it's the provider systems that are naming the prices.
And what's been the role of antitrust authorities in addressing this form of consolidation, and what limitations do they face?
Good question, because we often rely on our antitrust authorities, right, to evaluate transactions and block them if they are likely to be anti-competitive. And I would say two things. The Department of Justice is the one that was evaluating all these insurance mergers back in the day, and they saw the market as more fluid and recognized that these for-profit players that were merging were significantly smaller than really the big game in almost every town, which is Blue Cross and Blue Shield affiliate. Now, many of those affiliates converted to be for profit, and all those for profits merged into an entity called Anthem and now renamed Elevance. But within any given local market, the mergers were occurring among other players. And so I suspect that the Department of Justice was less concerned, and I know they raised few concerns. We ended up with a reasonably consolidated sector. DOJ did step in and block some very large proposed mergers in the 2016-2018 era, Anthem and Cigna and Aetna and Humana. They stepped in there, but one of the biggest phenomena is that the large insurers are getting larger. That is what we call organic growth as opposed to structural growth induced by mergers and acquisitions. And there's not much that antitrust authorities can do about organic growth unless it's achieved through exclusionary practices, and then they could do something.
You say in your article that because of the dissatisfaction with the corporatized insurance sector, some observers have suggested that health policymakers should actually cut insurers out of the equation. You also say, though, that you don't see that as a practical solution. So why is that?
Backtrack just a moment, because there's dissatisfaction with insurance, and I'm not at all confident that it's the corporatized nature of it so much as there's general dissatisfaction with the insurance sector. Of course, the corporatized players do impact the behavior of those that I would rule out as corporatized, including the nonprofit insurers. And many would say that the nonprofits, certainly in some sectors, are not very different. There's not much research on whether the nonprofits and for-profit insurers behave that differently, although there's a little bit of evidence that's dated suggesting the nonprofits price lower, all else equal, if you will, for what they're offering. But to answer your question, the idea of just, hey, these insurers are a giant pain, they're, you know, skimming some margin and creating a lot of administrative burdens and interfering with the physician-patient relationship, let's just X them out, is really, I think, besides being unrealistic, I think we would not end up in a good place. Somebody has to hold the purse strings.
Finally, given all these realities, what policies could be considered to improve insurer performance and reduce the potentially negative effects of corporatization?
I have ideas that I wrote about on the, you know, supply side and on the demand side. And, you know, being an economist, what does that mean? Supply side, it is basically there are changes that can be made to foster competition, to enable both new entrants and growth of smaller insurers instead of the opposite, which is what we have seen historically and are, in fact, at least in my local market, continuing to see with a recent insurance merger announced between Fallon Health and Mass General's health plan. But basically lowering barriers to entry and making it easier for small insurers to gain access to favorable or at least competitive rates with provider systems would be one way. It is a challenging way, but there are other approaches that one could take, including centralizing and standardizing provider credentials and claims processes and EHRs, things that are costly for smaller insurers to have to sort out. If there are federal standards on these things, then it should lower the fixed costs associated with insurance. I think that would help. So that's on the supply side. And on the demand side, one of the reasons that we have such high insurance premiums is the fact that those shopping for them, in particular employers who provide the vast majority of or sponsor the vast majority of commercially insured health insurance, maybe not vast, but majority, is that they're not very price elastic shoppers. There are a lot of reasons for that that I don't go into in the article, including that a lot of decisions are made by human resources departments who may not be facing strong pressure to contain spending and may in fact be facing a lot of pressure to contain any enrollee complaints. And enrollee complaints arise when there's tough utilization review and when there are restraints on provider networks. And these things actually do result in lower premiums. So to the point of how does one increase the downstream sensitivity of demand to price and also to service and plan quality, ideas that I have include basically requiring more variety in plan types, both premium levels and actually characteristics of provider networks, that requiring that those be offered to enrollees, because if enrollees have more choices, they may act on them, which in turn can lead insurers to compete more intensely on what products they're offering, and then ultimately providers to recognize that enrollees are not all able or willing to pay ever-increasing prices and that they may have to come up with alternative strategies to contain spending. So I think there could be, you know, what we call a flywheel or virtuous cycle effect if demand is given the opportunity to respond to insurance offerings.
Thank you, Professor Daphne.